better.
I like it.
Well, there are two things to be done. First of all, we put him in the hospital and withdraw all television.
I see.
And then we give him this.
Radio!
All eyes on me. I'm Daniel Keelman.
Kyle Lamon, that's me. Hello.
This is episode number 153 of Test Spatters. I'm pretty sure you said that sentence in reverse order.
I did. I was throwing a real curveball there. Some almost Yoda speak, pretty much.
That's a reverse curveball, man. I don't know how to describe that.
I've been playing a lot of Witcher, so everyone kind of talks a little weird. So
what is Witcher,
maybe
Kyle?
What
is Witcher? Please do tell.
I've been playing the most recent Witcher, Witcher 3 Wild Hunt, and it's a cool action RPG. I have a feeling it's going to be really, really long, but you basically play as like a Witcher, and he's a monster hunter. He's got these special powers where he can like kind of track monsters and other people. It kind of has like the weird, like when you hold down one of the trigger buttons, you get kind of like that Batman sense that's in every single game now.
Detective Vision.
Yeah, Detective Vision. And I really like it. There's a little bit of Red Dead in there with exploration, a little Skyrim, a little Dragon Age, the latest one. So pretty cool RPG. Lots of stuff to check out.
Well, I've heard that it's quite the time sink, and it does take a long time to beat, so you're certainly in for a long one. And, like, there's, like, 50 endings or something to it, so...
Yeah, something like that.
You got your work cut out for you there.
Yeah, the side quests are really cool so far. Like, they all have, like, these interesting little stories, and they kind of employ, like, that telltale system where there are a few, like, choices where you have a limited amount of time to make a decision. Like, there's not too many of them. But I do like that's kind of thrown in there to kind of spice it up.
Right.
There is a lot of talking.
Yeah.
But you can easily skip through if you're getting bored with a certain character. But I haven't really been skipping too much.
And there's real-time beard growing.
Exactly.
Which is everyone's there for. All the ladies are there for Gerard's beard growing.
That's part of the... you get like 16... There's like 16 free DLC packs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the... the most recent ones.
Thank God.
I'm gonna grow mine out super long.
Gandalf style.
Yeah.
Well, very fun times, Kyle. So, not much else going on in the world right now. We got some things we're gonna be talking about soon. This is a podcast for people that may not know that already that you're listening to. And it's been pretty okay lately.
How are you doing?
What was that?
How are you doing? Old Daniel, my friend.
Old Daniel, friend, brother Daniel. I am doing very good, actually. Been very busy lately. Lots of traveling, lots of keeping on top of a couple projects. But overall, everything's going very nicely. I can't talk about this. And this is a good place to talk about it. At my work, my job, Simply Music, a music education company, we recently launched a crowdfunding campaign where we're trying to raise money for a music education program that we want to give away for free, and it's called Simply Music Gateway, and we want to give it away to all families with children who have autism so they can learn piano, because there's been a lot of studies that have shown that kids or people who suffer from autism and other special needs, playing the piano is really, really good for so many different kind of therapies with children, but it's also a form of expression and a talent and something that gives them a really, you know, joy.
Yeah.
And the method that the company that I work for uses has been proven that it works really well with children with people with special needs. And so we're trying to raise money for this. So if you'd like to donate, they are doing a Indiegogo, not a Kickstarter for it. And if you just, you know, Google Simply Music Gateway or just go to simplymusicgateway.com, that's where it is. And we're just trying to give away for free. It's a very, very noble effort. And it was really, really exciting because the local news station last week...
Yeah, I saw that link you sent me.
They posted they did a story on it. And I remember them coming by our office and recording a couple things. And I had to actually send them a lot of the footage that I had shot for various things we had done. And it was really, really crazy because they did a news segment last week on Wednesday night, and I saw a bunch of my footage being used in this TV news segment. So it was kind of exciting to see your stuff on TV, actually. Yeah, not
yeah,
so,
yeah.
it's been a first to see my stuff on broadcast. So it was really exciting. It was really nice to see that, and hopefully it brings awareness to it.
So that new program, it's not just for kids with autism. It could be, like, any kind of special need.
I think they're tailoring it specifically for children with autism, yeah. But I'm pretty sure it could be anybody with special needs, really, because it's certainly about anybody who learns differently. And
I totally agree, because my brother has cerebral palsy, and he definitely learns through music, and that certainly helps. He has a music program, and he's really flourished in that, like, coming out of his shell.
Right.
And then before that, he did, horseback riding therapy. So, yeah, any kind of thing like that where you just kind of... It kind of works for anybody, really, kind of getting them out of their comfort zone.
Exactly.
And exploring something that's fun, which music and horseback riding is definitely fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's a very inspiring. It's been very crazy to see the progress with some of the students have been doing it. So... It'll be, I hope it's successful. Definitely. So I'm preaching the word here of trying to get awareness to it. And the other thing I was going to say, though, is there was one funny thing that happened. And Kyle, I'd appreciate your insight on this. Is at the very, very end of the news segment on our local TV station, everything was going fine in the whole, story. They were telling the story pretty accurately and talking about it and certainly giving their angle on it, but it was fine. But at the very, very end, they got a couple of key things very incorrect. Mainly, they said, and it was all in, two sentences. All they said was, Simply Music is a free education piano system for children with special needs, and it's funded by donations. And everything about that statement was completely wrong. It was like, not right at all.
Did they use the phrase nonprofit? I can't remember exactly.
I don't know if they said they said nonprofit.
But still, funded with donations.
But funded with donations gives that implication. Yeah, exactly. So it was very off is what it was. And we were all just like, oh my God, they got so much wrong in just a short amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... that's definitely happened, not with me, that wrong, because I've always very, especially if it's, a news item, even from the entertainment world, you don't want to get things wrong. And I see that a lot with TV news, where their staff is smaller. You definitely see it with, newspapers now, where, the staff is, really, really small.
Right.
And they have to, get things out. And with TV, I don't really have a background with that, but I'm sure... they're getting things wrong all the time.
Well, it was...
just because they're, pushing things out and...
yeah.
Not really, checking on, all the facts.
Yeah, and it's...
it happens to everybody, but,
And I hadn't watched our local news in so long, but we were watching it in my office. And as we were watching it, it was just, your local 5 o'clock news. And... we were waiting. We didn't know when our story was going to come on, but I didn't realize they go from one story to the next like that. It's every 30 seconds is a new story. And,
ADD.
And they're just moving from next one, next one, next one. So, I mean, of course they're going to get things wrong in that because there's so much compacted into, and that's just one day's worth of news. And so it was certainly not, it didn't shock me after I kind of thought about it that way, just and noticing how many stories are put into just one newscast. It was very incredible.
The good thing is people will probably, they'll at least hear the name, Simply Music has that's a good, it's a quick thing for people to remember, and they won't necessarily remember the whole funded by donations.
Yeah, that's what my boss said too. My boss came in the next day and we talked about that and he kind of laughed at it and he told a story about how there was another time that a news person came in and they focused, it was many, many years ago, he said, but he said there was an article that ran in a magazine, Sacramento Magazine or something, and basically the person, my boss said one thing in particular about how the method works. And the writer for the story got it, focused on that one thing, but totally put it in a different direction. And it was he kind of could see how, because it's abstract. He could see how they didn't get it right, but they really, really went in their own direction on it with it. And he laughed. He's just it's fine. People aren't, they're gonna
mistakes happen.
Yeah.
I've done that in interviews, where I'll interview some musician and kind of it's not necessarily wrong, but it's I took my own prejudices and took this
right
this simple thing and made it into something that was bigger. It wasn't like a scandalous thing, but it was just kind of like they come back to you and they're like, eh, that was a little off.
Right.
But yeah, it definitely does happen.
Right. Yeah. And like you said, my boss just laughed at it because he was like, it'll, you know, it still, it gets our name out there. It gets people to the website. We have giant ads on our website telling like, you know, hey, here's where this thing is, you know? So it wasn't, it was certainly, you mm-hmm. know, if anything gets us to the people to the website, then it's perfectly fine. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, all right. Anything else with you, Kyle, before we get going on the episode here?
Nothing really. I did a little lagoon walk over the weekend, which was kind of cool. There's a bunch of lagoons down here in the, I don't know, like north of San Diego. There are a bunch of them kind of near Carlsbad. And that was fun. It's kind of been kind of overcast lately. So thought that's a good, it was kind of raining, but it was a good walk. I like that. Very boring topic, but hey, thought I would.
Thank you, Kyle. Yeah, riveting.
My old man sat down on a log bench, thought about my life.
Yes. Well, on that note, let's talk about this week's episode of Test Patterns. First up, we're going to be discussing the series finale of one of the longest running figures in late night television history, which was the finale of The Late Show with David Letterman last week. After that, we're going to be discussing a new summer quiz show TV series called 500 Questions. And lastly, we have a classic movie, the Frank Capra classic, It Happened One Night. That's Test Patterns. Kyle, any more words before we get started for real now?
Just some words of wisdom.
Please.
Make sure to, you know, buy some flowers for your significant other, even if it's, you know, guy, girl, whatever, whenever you want. Just surprise him. Doesn't have to be on a holiday.
Did you just do this for your significant other?
No, I did. I never do that. I just tell people, other people, to do it. Yeah, I did, and it worked out well.
Aww, it was very true.
It's good to surprise.
That's very true. That's very sweet of you, Kyle. A+. What kind of flowers did you get?
Some roses. Right. I haven't actually given Brooke, my wife, roses before, so I was like, yeah, try that out.
And did she like them?
Yeah. I've given her, like, other things, like orchids or, you know, daffodils,
right.
other stuff. She likes Gerber daisies, so I've given her that a few times. But, yeah, the old classic.
Nice. Well, I hope that it worked out well, and maybe you'll go on a date with her soon.
Maybe. I'm hoping.
All right. Well, let's get started then, shall we? Yes, we shall. So, first up, we're going to be discussing the series finale of The Late Show with David Letterman.
From New York, the greatest city in the world, it's The Late Show with David Letterman. Tonight, Cher and Jerry Springer. Plus Paul Schaefer and the CBS Orchestra. And now, 12th century German visionary...
Last week saw the exit of one of the most prominent figures in late night and television history in general, of David Letterman, from the finale of his late night talk show, Late Show with David Letterman. The show originally debuted on August 30th, 1993, but David Letterman had been on TV for much, much longer than that. I believe it was said, 33 years in broadcasting overall or something like that?
Yeah, he had a morning show, and then it was like called Late Night for a while.
Well, he did, and he did the original Late Night, which was later on taken on by like Conan O'Brien and Jimmy Fallon. That was after the Tonight Show on NBC, and then we don't need to. I mean, so many articles and postings, and so many people already know about David Letterman. So it's kind of pointless to go down the road of how, you know, there's the feud between him and Leno. But I mean, it is worth saying that Late Show with David Letterman was the result of him not getting the Tonight Show, and so he went to CBS and became a late show there, where it, you know, fought against the Tonight Show for a while. So that's the shortest version possible. I mean, I would figure most people know who David Letterman is. I mean, he's clearly been a prominent figure in news and in entertainment and comedy for so many years now. And it was very exciting to watch the finale last week. It was one of the first times I've watched live TV since, like, maybe the Oscars earlier this year. Like,
definitely, like, certainly late night, because, you know, now it's customary to just watch it, like, watch clips.
Right.
Fallon.
Right. I mean, I'll watch my Daily Show and my now nightly show and previously Colbert Report, and I'll watch all of those at night. But yeah, exactly. It's not really the institution that it once was. Although, you know, it's still certainly evolving, to say the least. I mean, I think it's safe to say that.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, Late Show is certainly the end of an era in many ways. And I guess I'll talk a little bit personally. Is that I do remember growing up, I always enjoyed the top 10 list with David Letterman. I think that was my entry point, and I remember thinking those were really funny. And I remember growing up, when I finally was able to start staying up later and to, like, watching late-night TV, I just naturally would watch Letterman. I remember that Leno would be on, too, but I never really got into it. I certainly went through a period.
Yeah, same.
I went through a period where I tried out a lot of them, but I kept going back to Letterman for a long time. Then later on, my taste evolved where I became a Conan fan and a Jimmy Kimmel fan. And then then since then, I've kind of, now I'm too tired to stay up that late and watch it. But
yeah, well, I definitely agree, like, my introduction to late night comedy was David Letterman, because I was too young for Carson by the time I started staying up late and watching it with my dad. And I did like the top 10 stuff, but I liked all the, like, the zany stuff with, like, Velcro suits or, like,
stupid pet tricks,
hydraulic press,
or dropping stuff off the roof and everything. Yeah,
or really old stuff where I kind of vaguely remember the things when he would, like, get a megaphone or a bullhorn and just, like, yell out the window at like the Today Show,
right,
and say, like, I'm not wearing pants, and order a bunch of hot dogs. And he kind of, like, he did all, like, that kind of YouTube stuff before YouTube was YouTube. That just real zany, like, crazy late night type of material on top of, like, the usual things that are staples,
right.
Like, or he became staples with, like, Top 10 and, you know, other, like, always having dog trainers on or animal people.
Well, and he also, and he certainly, I think the analogy I often heard was he brought the frat boy humor to late night. It was that, you know, kind of, it wasn't dumb humor, but it was just doing a lot of crazy things and just, you know,
it wasn't above him.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
There was plenty of, like, smart humor in, like, the beginning monologue, but then he also wasn't afraid to just be zany.
Yeah.
Get silly with, like, the guests or I loved all this stuff with Biff Henderson.
He's
like he's like one of the, I can't remember the exact title for that guy, but there was a lot of stuff with him and then the deli guy.
Right. Well, I remember also for a period that I was watching, he would play this game every Tuesday night where they would play, like, know your cuts of meat or know your, the game kept evolving. Like, it became so obscure. And, like, I just love that David Letterman, if you were in on the joke, then he would just let it go for so, so long. Like, that segment was a running segment for many, many, many weeks. And he just stuck to it. He didn't bother explaining it every time. It just went and was done. And I like that commitment to it. And I just like the absurdity of a lot of it. It was really, really good, crazy humor.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he definitely brought something really new to the landscape. Like, the last few years, I actually went back and, like, kind of looked through, like, old Johnny Carson shows because I never really watched him.
Yeah.
And at the time, like, he was kind of responding to his kind of rigid quality. Like, Johnny Carson is great. Like, they called him the King of Comedy for a reason. Like, he was really funny. But at the time, Letterman was kind of like the fresh face, kind of like with Fallon and Conan and Jimmy Kimmel, like, doing stuff that's, like, wacky and, you know, getting the attention.
Right.
So it kind of makes sense that all these new comics are coming on the scene and now Letterman's going out. Like, it's kind of come full circle.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's fairly safe to say. I mean, I've been listening to so many different retrospectives on David Letterman. I mean, everybody knows he was a huge impact. And it's, you know, it's very safe to say that late night TV would not be what it is right now without David Letterman. He influenced pretty much all of them. I think all of them would agree with that. And he just totally changed how The Tonight Show was revolutionary on its own. And like you said, Johnny Carson was king. But David Letterman, in many of the iterations of the shows he hosted, he influenced, I think, everybody who's doing it now, just as he was influenced by Carson. So it's certainly, it's incredible to see, like, what he did. And then when you look back at, like, just, so the finale was last Wednesday night, and I haven't watched Letterman in a while. I haven't watched many late-night TV. And it was, and it ended up being essentially just a clip show, a really, really well-done clip show, honestly, like, in all the bright ways.
Yeah, I ended up watching, like, kind of like the most of the stuff from that last week. And it was cool seeing, like, all these people coming back, like Clinton and Howard Stern, Julie Roberts. George Clooney had a really cool bit where he, like, handcuffed himself to David Letterman and said, "You're not leaving." And it just, like, the list goes on and on. Like, I really like the whole, like, top 10 list with all the comedians that came out.
That was great, yeah.
The finale. And it was just, like, it really reminded me, like, I think that's one of the reasons why I kind of stuck with, like, watching all the interviews, because I really liked, like, maybe not so much like his later stuff, Letterman stuff, where he was interviewing people, because he got a little more like curmudgeonly and didn't really, didn't have that same spark.
Yeah.
But it kind of brought that back with all these people that he knew so well, because I always liked his interview style, because he wasn't afraid to just like poke fun at people or bring up like really awkward subjects.
Yeah. Yeah.
With, like, Paris Hilton, I remember that interview. I remember watching that live, actually. And just, like, she was fresh out of jail, and he kept, like, asking about it. And they're just, like, there's so many, like, iconic moments like that. So It was cool to kind of get both, like, actual clips from the past, but then a lot of other...
And that's one of the problems with a lot of late night shows is when it gets to the celebrity interviews, it's pretty hit or miss with, you know, if it's somebody you're interested, you watch. And with Letterman, I wouldn't say that I always watch to the interviews, but he certainly, I do agree that he would either have people on and not be afraid to ask them about the stuff that they didn't want to talk about, or he'd have people on that you didn't even know and would just talk to them and find really funny things. And there's so many iconic, really, like, landmark things that happened with that, whether it's the stuff with Andy Kaufman that happened with his interviews, or with Harvey, exactly, or Harvey Picar, or Madonna, or what, like, there was just so many different
things and that happened. Some of it's just kind of, like, outside of his control, like, the whole, like, Crispin Glover thing,
right,
where he almost, like, kicked him, but that's part of the format, which I really like. You never know what's gonna happen with just crazy people coming on, especially if they're celebrities,
right,
because, you know, sometimes they're just out of their minds on drugs and I like that. And he always, like, he had a good way of reacting to all that and kind of keeping the ball rolling, but also, like, throwing in jokes unexpectedly.
Yeah, you know, he always had a really good quick jab in there too. I mean, he made it look very easy, he made it look natural, and it was really... There's nobody that I certainly like other late night hosts a lot. I have no, you know, I enjoy watching my Fallon and my Kimmel when I can, but Letterman certainly, like, when I was watching the whole finale and seeing all these clips from the past, just reminded me that he's just been around for so long and talked to so many people. There's so many just great segments in there and great interviews, and it's insane to think of how many people he's talked to over the years and how important those conversations have been to, you know, the conversation, the zeitgeist, if you will.
Yeah, I think the one... We talked about this earlier, not during the podcast, but the one thing I didn't like from the finale that was kind of like... I've seen this in other shows, and I think I've seen this in Letterman as well, is the whole, like... behind the scenes, like, what do I do leading up to a broadcast, you know, of the over 6,000 episodes that they have, you know, recorded.
Yeah.
And that was just kind of like, kind of humdrum, and it wasn't, a lot of the jokes that they peppered throughout that segment weren't that funny, and then it was also, like, really
long. And it was also, it seemed...
But everything else was really fun and just a trip down memory lane.
Yeah, it seemed very stagey, too, because I've heard that David Letterman is, like, one of the hardest people to work with and so cantankerous and not easygoing at all. And so I kind of didn't buy a lot of what was in that documentary, personally. Not that I think he's like evil or anything like that. I just have heard. I just had a hard time believing that he would be.
Oh, when he's like working with his staff. Like,
yeah.
Seemed a little staged just for the final throw for a while.
Yeah, I thought that. I mean, like its heart was in the right place of showing the people who make the show, but I just think it wasn't that well done. I agree. That was the only really sore spot of the episode. But I think everything else was really spot on. I think his monologue was great, and I think the whole thing at the very end with Foo Fighters playing Everlong and then showing all of those images and a couple of little clips there, I mean, that's going to be one of those, you know, people have been talking about that a lot already, and I think it's definitely going to go out as one of the, like, I don't remember how Jay Leno ended The Tonight Show, but I remember how David Letterman ended his show.
Yeah, I don't remember at all.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I like how they had, like, a real cyclical nature to it. Like, I think it was was Bill Murray the guest the night before?
Yeah, he was the last actual interview guest that he had, yeah.
Yeah, and that made total sense because I actually rewatched like the first episode of his show.
Right.
And Bill Murray's been on there a lot. Like there was one time when he like spray painted his desk, and it was really cool to have him there. And then he goes out onto the streets and leads in a crowd chant where he was like. Saying, like, we need more worldwide pants. So, yeah, I think it was almost like, I think if I had just watched the finale, it would have been like, oh, this is fun, a nice little clip show. But I'm glad I watched, like, a lot of the episodes leading up to that.
Right.
Because it was kind of like some of the best of clips actually kind of appeared before that final episode.
Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, it's been building up for a while, so
and it's all up on YouTube too. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and
all that stuff.
And I think you can find
so many hours.
And I think somebody I was listening to a podcast right before we started this, and it was talking about how there was already this one person who posted a whole article about all those images and that final thing, and like when it aired, what it meant, what it was from, and like so. There's a whole ton of information out there for if you want to see all the greatest Letterman things to see. And it's great that it all exists out there. I wouldn't know where to begin, but it was a really, really fun ride to have. It's certainly the end of an era, and it's been a really fun ride having him around. I'm very excited for what I think that hiring Stephen Colbert to replace him is by far the smartest thing CBS did. I really don't know.
Yeah, that was really
it was
cool.
Very bold.
And I think it's good for them, but it's also good for Colbert because he's kind of like, he already kind of showed like some of his just straight up comedy without like the persona that he had on the Colbert show. So now he can like stretch that out and it's like a fresh start and he can just do whatever he wants.
Yeah, I think he's in I think it's a really, really good deal for everybody. And I'm very excited by what Colbert can do with that because he's definitely earned like, you know, he's very Letterman-like. He certainly is cantankerous and kind of an edgy, and he was one of the most thrilling people in Late Night with the Colbert Report, and so I'm really excited that he's sticking around more for that because I really, really, I'm genuinely enthusiastic about Late Night TV with seeing what he's going to do because I think he's taking over in December, I think is when it's debuting. I'm not sure, but very exciting.
Yeah, something like that. One final thing I wanted to point out was it was a surprise. Like, I don't think I had ever seen it, but I really liked that whole, I guess it's an iconic Dave Letterman moment, but I really like that when he's like at the Taco Bell
that's
and
a good
just,
one
just like messing with people, like I had never seen that before.
That was
really
see
funny.
I saw that when it originally
pretty much showed all of that.
Yeah, see, and a lot of those segments I had seen them before when I had watched in the 90s, and I don't know if I saw them when they originally aired or whatever, but yeah, that Taco Bell one I had seen before, and that one's a classic, and there was a lot of there was a lot of great moments like that, just seeing those again and remembering like all the things he had done. Yeah, no, they were great. And I think
it really worked, like that final.
It was good. I do want to say one other thing though about Late Show with David Letterman is like in I think it was in 2000 he had a quadruple bypass, which is a very, very big deal. Mm-hmm. But it certainly and it was amazing that they were able to continue the show for another 15 years after that. But I remember watching his return from when that happened, and it was really touching. He had all the doctors who worked on him in the hospital there, and it was really, really emotional. But it certainly did change the tone of the show because I think after that, he didn't really go out into the world as much as he used to. And before that, he did a lot of man on the street stuff or running around doing crazy things. And I mean, obviously,
which was like the real personality of the show.
Yeah,
but, you know, it makes sense. Like,
his health certainly had to come first. So I'm not saying they shouldn't have done that, but it definitely showed that a lot of the iconic Letterman moments came prior to that because he was able to go out and be crazy. And after that, it kind of slowed things down, and the landscape was changing too. Yeah. So, I mean, it was complicated, but
yeah. Well, and he had some, like, I don't know, like, even through, like, some of the, we didn't mention any of the, like, kind of controversies with, like, you know, the whole thing that where a guy was kind of like,
blackmailing him. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Blackmailing him because he slept with, like, some people on the show. And I don't know, through all that stuff, like, I remember when he, like, addressed that and then addressed, like, other things that were more, like, personal. And he still kept it, like, funny and then somehow kept it going. Like, CBS could have easily, like, fired him and then, like, kept going.
Exactly.
But it made it, like, compelling television, even with, like, really awkward and very personal bits.
Yeah.
And even though, like, I didn't keep watching, like, I've always have a place with that guy.
Yeah, same.
Just
same,
like,
here.
A nice, good history there, and it was good watching the final episode.
Yeah, I was really, really definitely wanted to take the time to watch that live because I was really Letterman's been a big part of my growing up, so I certainly was sad to see him go. But as it must go with all shows at some point. So that is the finale of Late Show with David Letterman. And if you missed it, it's online somewhere, but that's just more just a retrospective for people just talking about David Letterman. So, yeah. All right. Next up, we are going to be discussing the debut of another TV show. Maybe this one will be just as classic as Late Show with David Letterman. We really don't know yet. The show certainly would like to tell you that. Says it at the beginning of every episode. Next up, we're discussing the debut of the new ABC trivia show event, 500 Questions.
A seven-night event.
You are about to witness television history.
From Mark Burnett, the man who brought you Survivor, The Voice, and Shark Tank.
The pressure is on.
The world's smartest people battle.
Princeton, Harvard Law, an IQ of 158.
In the most challenging game ever created.
Can you do it?
Does anyone have what it takes to conquer?
English. Chinese. Spanish. Russian.
You got it!
500 Questions.
It's been a while since we've talked about a trivia game show on this old podcast, this old house. and I thought, or actually Daniel thought, hey, let's talk about 500 questions. I don't want to steal your thunder.
Please,
This gold.
Jungle gold, if you will.
Unearthed. So ABC, this is their new game show, 500 Questions. And it premiered last Wednesday, and it's running for 7 straight weeknights. Which is very interesting. Like, when I heard that, I was like, oh, you know, ABC is trying some new things with whether it's their game show or the dramas, even in some of their comedies, or, you know, trying at least something. And it's, you know, it's really promoted as like this event, like with like the smartest people of the world trying to answer 500 questions and not getting knocked out. And the show, it's hosted by CNN journalist, he's a British guy, Richard Quest. And kind of has the aesthetic of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which was also an ABC show. And you have to answer 500 questions without getting 3 wrong in a row. And you got one, there's in the first episode that I saw, or the first two, there's one guy that's answering questions. You kind of just spit out answers. And you won't get cash for that particular answer, but you'll still keep it if you end up saying the correct
answer. Stay in the
answer, game. You stay in the game, exactly. And I don't know. The main thing that kind of, I don't know, beyond that, it's not like super, there's no like crazy twist. I was waiting for some like real weird thing about it, but it's pretty standard as far as like, you know, there's, every once in a while you'll get like a battle scenario where you go head to head with the other opponent across the way, and then there's a few other kind of curveballs, but most of it's just like rather questions, and then there's also a triple threat question where you have 3 correct answers, and the contestants must provide all 3 correct answers within like a 10-second time limit. And, you know, you have, like, a bunch of different categories you can kind of run through. And I think the main thing that was kind of weird with this first episode is I really didn't like, one, the host. He was just, like, really intense, like, in your face. And it was just kind of to the point where he's annoying. Like, at the beginning, like, he was, like, he just, like, stuck his finger in the one of the guy's faces. Yeah. And he was just, like, you will be knocked out.
Yeah.
Like, it really has that who wants to be a millionaire kind of tone, but without any of the levity of somebody like Regis Philbin or Meredith. But what did you think about Daniel? I think you said that you watched much more than...
Yeah, I am completely up to date with 500 Questions. And I would also to add that it was created by Mark Burnett and Mike Darnell. And Mark Burnett's most known for the infamous Survivor series. Yeah. But he also did, like, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Yes, My Beloved Shark Tank. So I'm always curious what that guy has going on next. And, yeah, so... Okay. I mean, I was curious because I don't know what it is, but, like, I always find new game shows just really fascinating because none of them work. None of them really get... I mean, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader is kind of the most recent one to really become, I guess, kind of popular, but that's kind of fallen off the map now, too. And yeah. I never really liked that anyway. And I really hate the modern game show, actually. I think it's way too drawn out. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire really established that formula, and it was fun at the time with Regis, but then it quickly wore out its welcome, and...
I remember watching it, like, when I was watching, like, regular TV. Like, that was one of the last things
back in high school, junior high, like, that was a big deal, I remember. And...
Yeah. But, yeah, it kind of has, like, not quite as good as, like, 500 Questions, that is. It has the weird... Like, the whole... Even under the set, like, it's all dark.
Well, that's one of my problems. Is like, when did... It was all with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah, I like it when it was just, like, colorful and, like, funny people.
Here's the thing is, game shows, ever since Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, like, all game shows have become this dystopian sci-fi future where no color exists. The host has to be super dramatic, and everything is just all, like... Just lines and steely, and everyone's in the dark. They're so dumb. I'm like, what the hell happened to just
any... If they answer a question wrong, like, they're gonna fall into a pit of
Where's the dunk tank? Like, what's going on here? So let's get back to 500 Questions, though. One of my problems with this show is that at the beginning of every episode, Richard Quest, every single time, he goes, "You're watching television history," and it's kind of like, well, we'll be the judge if it's history or not. I don't think it's fair to say it's history before it comes on. And then, it's just like it's super overdramatic. I think the concept is fine, but it's just not really that great either. It's just a quiz show at the end of the day with the caveat get three wrong and you're out. But it really doesn't, and they have all these categories they pick from, and they try to jazz it up by having, like you were talking about, these different things where there's a battle or a top 10 list where you have to name things in a list or whatever. But honestly, it's just answers and questions, and it just, like, it just...
Yeah, well, it doesn't have, like, that same, like, nail-biting drama that Millionaire had where, you know, you only have a certain amount of time, and even that had some cool stuff where, like, you know, some strategy with, like, I'm going to phone a friend, I'm going to, you know, take out half of the questions.
Right.
And you have to, like, kind of strategize that. Like, only a strategy here where you can kind of be like, well, I'm pretty good at, like, Asian history. Keep a bunch of those. But then maybe it was just the contestant. I thought that guy was just, like...
He's very plain.
I didn't like both of them.
Well, and see, that's...
Yeah, he's very... I mean, they're supposed to be, like, these super smart guys, and then they're, like, missing things that are just real obvious. Like, I could...
Well, no,
that.
Here's... So, well,
but that's always, like, the thing.
Well,
with
here's
shows,
the thing.
Like,
is I have two responses for you. One is that I guess it is a little bit interesting to see how you can strategize, because the only way to lose is to get three wrong in a row. And once you get one right, you're reset. And so the contestants do have to be a little bit strategic in being like, oh, well, I want to pick this category. I want to save these categories because I think I know them really well, and I'll save those when I get two wrong. But that's, like, basically everyone's strategy, so it doesn't really make for anything really unique about that.
No, it's not very deep. And even I only watched the first episode, then kind of the beginning of the next one, and I'm curious, like, did that guy, that main contestant, did he keep going? Because he was really, like, on the fence, like,
he eventually
time.
Cashed out, yeah. So,
oh, he cashed out. Yeah. Okay.
And then like a new person came in and it started with a whole new slew of contestants. But and then my other criticism of the show is that there's like you were just saying, like they're supposed to be like these geniuses, and they aren't geniuses. Like, they're really, you know, well respected people in their field. And it's funny because the things that they get wrong are the more pop culture-y things, because they're going to know more about like the classics, right, and the things they've been educated on. But then when it comes to like modern pop culture, they're just like it's hit or miss whether or not they got that.
Yeah. That's how it was with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire,
yeah,
too.
And I agree. Like, I mean, the contestants are, because they're these super successful people, it's pretty boring, because they're not like, there's not a lot of personality in people that are really successful. They have nothing really to lose by being there. And they are also
Or they're just grading, like the guy that wasn't answering the questions.
Oh, yeah.
He was kind of like the antagonist on that first one. He was just like really smug and like, oh, you didn't get that one.
Just, but it's not,
I don't
even
know, like, I kind of hated all those people.
Yeah,
like,
they.
It was like, just felt like it was almost staged at some point. Like,
well, I'm sure that's the encouraging of producers going on, saying like, oh, you need to, you know, be more really attacking there. But that's part of the problem, is like they try to make it out like Richard Quest, the host, he tries to be like, every time they get like one wrong, he's like, you get one more and you are out, and he makes like the, you know, his waves his hands around, and it's just like, yeah, we get it, like, doesn't,
yeah. Well, that was my problem with it. Like, I was like, the first few times where, you know, he had two wrong and he was on the threshold of getting kicked out, like, inevitably he would get the next one and be fine, because he would just blurt out a bunch of like answers.
See,
like, oh, who's the third son of Adam and Eve, and he just like went through a list and finally got to Seth. It was like, I don't know, it just kind of kills like this whole vibe that they're trying to go for.
Yeah.
Like, they're obviously not going for, like, you know, a Family Feud kind of style, where it's, or Wheel of Fortune style, where it's a little more kind of, like, colorful, like, either, like, comedic with the host, or they get some, like, people on there that are, you know, more outgoing.
Yeah. It's basically the show's, I mean, it's not, I've certainly seen worse quiz shows. We've reviewed them on this very show, but this is definitely, or game shows, I should say. It's pretty forgettable. I don't think this is, I mean, what ABC's trying to do, I like that they are rolling it out as this like big thing where every night of the week they're doing a new extension of it. I kind of dig this whole, you know, going back to the basics of broadcast television, of trying to make something must-watch TV. However, I don't really think it's going to hit. The ratings have been fine as far as summer TV shows go.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
But it's not like, I think they were hoping, I mean, ultimately they were hoping, oh, it's going to do gangbusters, they could turn this into the new, like, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire or something like that. And it's clearly not going to happen. So I don't.
So what's, you're up to date.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's like the fifth,
fifth episode tonight,
aired,
yeah.
Right? So how far is, like, what's the furthest somebody's got?
There's somebody that broke 100.
The number of questions?
So, okay. I mean, that was interesting.
that was the thing about Quest. He was like, you're 5% of the way.
Yeah.
You do 500 questions. It was just,
yeah, it's,
I
just,
don't know. At a certain point, I was just like, I'm sick of these contestants. I want some new people. And I didn't like the format. I thought it was just, I thought it could be spiced up a little bit.
It's not just
Either through like some different kind of questions or just some kind of strategy involved. Because, you know, they're smart people. Let them be smart. That's a little more compelling than just rattling off a bunch of answers and then like, oh, you got the right answer. You didn't get any money, but you're still alive. And it just saps all the drama.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that more interesting contestants, I mean, that would certainly help, but I think at the end of the day, the formula for this is just, it's adequate. It's kind of whatever, it's blasé. And I do, and it also toes the line, because what I was secretly hoping/not hoping would happen would that this show was going to be way, way, way drawn out, that there'd be one question and it would take them like 10 minutes to answer that question. And that doesn't happen. When they ask the question, it gets answered pretty quickly, and they do roll through these relatively okay. Not as fast as you would think, but not as slow as you think either. So it's fine, but it's just still not that engaging or interesting.
Yeah, it's just too convoluted, the format, to really bother with.
There's lots of problems with it. It's not going to be brought back for anything. I certainly am happy that we got to be a part of this late night television history thing.
Oh, yeah.
So historic. We'll be talking about this in many decades to come in our history classes, but it's almost over. I'll stick it out to the end just because I'm curious enough, but there's if it gets brought back for any kind of series, there's no way I'm watching this. I'm definitely done with it.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, if you like the first one or two episodes, it's short, so you can get your fill and be done with it. It's not going to just keep going.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so... well, if you're listening to this, it's pretty much at the end of its run anyway, so, and we don't recommend you watch it anyway, but that is 500 Questions, which is airing every night on ABC. Check your local listings, but you don't need to, because it's not going to be on anymore. You don't need to watch it. And that's all for that. Lastly, we're going to be discussing a classic film, the 1934 American romantic screwball comedy classic, It Happened One Night.
Only because I told you not to.
She got away from us, sir.
Of course she got away. She's too smart for you.
Send a wireless to the Lovington Detective Agency. Daughter escaped again. Watch all roads, airports, and railway stations in Miami.
And a pig's eye, you will. Hey, listen, monkey face. When you fired me, you fired the best news hound your filthy scandal she'd ever had.
Why, you...
The screwball comedy is the often overlooked genre in film history, and it certainly had many influence on a lot of the films we see today, but it's never really been captured since. It's been, you know, here and there it's shown up, but it had its heyday back in the early days of sound and cinema in the 1930s, and the culmination of the screwball comedy, arguably one of the most successful of them, is the 1934 Frank Capra classic It Happened One Night. The film centers around a groundbreaking performance from Mr. Clark Gable as what's his name in this movie?
Peter Warren. He was recently fired as a newspaper reporter.
Precisely, and he's joined by the pampered socialite played by Claudette Colbert, who plays Ellie Andrews. And it's basically about these two people that, essentially the story boils down to Andrews, the female Colbert. She is engaged to this man that she wants to marry, and her dad won't let her, and so she runs away, and she, in doing so, well, she's trying to run away, and Clark Gable, as Peter Warren, a down-on-his-luck newspaper reporter, recognizes her and wants to help her out in getting away from her dad. And she and they go on some misadventures together, and he agrees to not turn her into her dad if she'll grant her a story, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of like the beginning of it, like that's his original intentions. But as they're like hitchhiking and getting to know each other, they slowly fall in love. Like I don't think I'm like spoiling anything for a movie.
I think you can tell by looking at the poster for this movie that they're gonna fall in love.
Right, right.
So I mean, like the film.
It was my first time watching it. I really liked it.
It's one of those movies that's so so simple and very effective. And I think it's at a fault because so many films have been influenced by it, and yet it's amazing to see how well that it's done here. Whether it's the comedy parts of it, or whether it's just like the antagonistic nature between the two of them like fighting each other, and in all honesty, that was actually very real. Apparently, like the production of this movie is also a crazy, crazy story. Like Frank Capra, after he finished it, he said this is the worst film he's ever directed. Nobody wanted to be in it. Absolutely no one. Like Clark Gable was kind of forced to. Claudette Colbert really, really didn't want to, and she requested like more money if she was going to be in it. This film, it's amazing that not only it exists, but
You always forget about that. This was still a time when they were like kind of like stuck to their,
there was a studio company, system. Yeah, so they were trying to contract with the studios, and that's exactly, so,
like they could hate like this movie or a series of movies, and they're just like, well, I gotta keep doing it to keep my career going.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I always forget about that. Yeah, I really like the rapport between the two main characters. I recently watched, I never really watched Gone with the Wind all the way through, and it was cool watching this, which came before it. And I really like Clark Gable. Like, I have a man crush on
him.
He's
a stud.
Really commands the screen. Yeah. Like, I love his mustache, like the whole way he like carries himself.
Yeah.
And Claudette, obviously, like, she kind of has that, like, really strong, like, I don't like a lot of what I like about the film noir actresses of the time, and I really want to check out some of her movies. I saw it on Amazon Prime, and I saw that some of her other stuff is on there. So probably check out some of that stuff. And I mean, you're true. It's pretty truthful what you're saying. Like, it's a very simple plot, but I like the way it all unravels and comes together at the end, kind of like culminating with the wedding ceremony. Mm-hmm. And you see that a lot with, like, a bunch of other, like, romantic comedies where somebody's set to get married, and then, you know, they obviously go with someone else that they recently met and fell in love with. So you see, like, it's influenced.
But even then, it's still...
Up through the 90s.
Right,
and now.
But even then, seeing it in so many other films since, it's still very effective here, and it works. Even though it's now become a trope. And then you also have the very famous scene where they're hitchhiking and Clark Gable's trying to hitchhike and he can't get a car to pick them up. And then Claudette Colbert, she just lifts up her leg and does it, and immediately they get picked up. Yeah. And it's just those little things. Like, they're just really, really funny, and they're so simple and been done since, but like they're really effective here.
Yeah, I like a lot of that stuff. Like, they're all back and forth where they're kind of sleeping. They're sleeping in separate beds in the hotel.
And right.
He puts up walls the of Jericho, iconic, the Walls of Jericho. And I like how at the end they don't, of course they're not going to show anything when they eventually, have sex, but then they ask for a, trumpet. And then, you know, like the walls of Jericho come down, and it's really, really cool the way that finishes off and goes back to the beginning of that whole relationship. Mm-hmm. I also like that there's like some really funny, like, but dramatic scenes where Clark Gable, like, he's talking to that one, like, shapely guy that they first meet in the bus, and he's like hitting on Claudette's character, and then Peter Warren, Clark Gable, he comes over and says, like, oh, I'm her husband, get out of here. But then later on, he realizes that shapely guy, he realizes that Ellen is who
right,
she
she's
is,
the missing girl, and there's a reward for her and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a reward for her. And so he, like, kind of takes him out there, and I just love how that scene plays out where he's like, he goes from, like, saying, like, hey, I got all these guns, and then he's like, you know, we're going for a bigger reward, and then he just basically scares him away. Like get out of here, I'm going to shoot you.
Yeah.
and he never plays it where you think, like, oh, this guy's, like, a real scoundrel. Like, he really walks that line where you still, like, you're still really infatuated with him and see him as, like, the romantic lead.
Yeah, he's very charming. And even all the way up to the end, like, this film is able to pull off the whole, like, miscommunication thing, because you have the whole thing where she thinks that Clark Gable ran off in the middle of the night to collect the reward money. Yeah. And so she's ran back to her dad, who now is okay with her marrying the rich guy. And she's, like, driving to the church as Clark Gable is, like, driving to come get her. Like, all that stuff, it's now been done to death, but it works really well here because it was done first, I guess. But also just, I don't know, there's something natural to it of the time and everything where everything feels like it's part of this universe, and you nailed it. Yeah. Like, Clark Gable is very, very charming in this role. He really pulls it off.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're both really charming. And then it has that usual staple of screwball comedies and even, like, rom-coms now, where you've got two people that are in different socioeconomic backgrounds. And they play that up for both comedy, but also drama. And I really like how it all comes together. It's a really good movie. Like, we didn't talk too much about it. We talked about the performances and some of the iconic moments. But I think it really looks good, too. Like, they restored it recently for a Criterion Collection. Mm. And I think it looks really good. Like, just, it makes sense that it got, like, the...
That's worth talking about, that this was the first film to win the Big Five at the Academy Awards, which includes picture, director, actor, actress, and writing. And only four films have done that? Three? It's really, really rare to happen.
Yeah, it's like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, really rare to happen.
I don't know if it's anything beyond that.
It certainly, and it deserves it. Like, it's a really, really, and I think of all those awards, though, I think director is probably the one that most people would not think, because I think Frank Capra had, I think he does a lot without being flashy in this. Like, Frank Capra later on became, he's probably more well-known for It's a Wonderful Life. And he certainly did, like, this whole American Dream, very, very patriotic films of the 30s and 40s. He really was a great filmmaker, but it's really easy to overlook his style. I think Capra-esque has become a style. People certainly refer to that, but he really made something look like magically real, natural, but it's pretty fantastical in ways. Like, these people exist in this universe, and they're...
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, there's the way that these... you know, almost like run-of-the-mill kind of scenes play out, like that whole scene that you're talking about where they're on the fence and hitchhiking, like the way those characters are like set up and the way it's all framed, it's iconic because a lot of his direction,
right.
I think, and the cinematography is really good too in parts. You know, there's some scenes that don't look as good in, I don't know, in hindsight, but still, like, it's really, really, really strong visual movie in addition to all the acting.
Yeah, no, it's a great movie. And, I mean, it certainly influenced so many films after this. And this kind of was at the peak of the screwball comedy. I mean, it had already happened for a while. And it certainly continued up into the late 30s and a little bit into the 40s. But it had fallen out of fashion very, very easily by, like, the mid-40s. I mean, you know, film had moved on. And it's never really been around since. I mean, we get them every now and then. I guess now they're like rom-coms, but they're not like these were. It was a different time. It was pre-code. It was very innocent without being,
I guess they, like... I guess, like, a version of it tried to come back with, like, you know, like the pillow talk kind of movies with like Doris Day and Rock Hudson,
yeah,
that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know, like really, really strong male and female characters, kind of like will they, won't they kind of stuff. And you've seen it in like so many TV shows,
right?
Like Cheers, especially, and I don't know, even stuff that doesn't work as well as this. It's a go to for both drama and romance. And,
yeah.
And especially comedy, too.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, no, it's a really great film. If you have Amazon Prime, it's worth your time. I forgot that Criterion released an edition of it, and I certainly may have to put that on my list, because I used to have this movie on DVD, but it wasn't a great transfer, and so this would definitely be worth getting now that there's that new one out.
Yeah, I was originally going to get it, but then I saw it on Amazon Prime. It's very interesting, especially since you were talking about the background of it that I didn't really know quite about too much about it.
Yeah, no, this film has a really fascinating story of how it got made. Like, nobody wanted to make it. It's just insane. It's really, really crazy.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, I mean, any other final thoughts, Kyle, on It Happened One Night?
I think it's just like a real people pleaser is how I could summarize it, because it's got all these, it's got the comedy, it's got the drama, it's got the road movie, very American movie. I agree.
This is a very family film in a way. I mean, it's certainly more for like anybody who's like in a relationship or a couple. Once you have like that, you know, understanding, but it's a very innocent film that anybody could watch at any age, and funny. So,
it's not there's no like real violence or sexual stuff, because it's, you know,
about the time. And also, very famously, it's been said that Clark Gable's performance in this movie inspired the creation of the character Bugs Bunny in Looney Tunes.
Oh yeah, with the carrot.
Carrot, what's up, Doc? A lot of things he says. So yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Oh man. Oh Clark.
Oh, Clark's a stud. I'm in love with that man. But That is all for It Happened One Night, the 1934 classic film. We are both in agreement. Kyle picked it, but I'm definitely in agreement on it being a classic. And that is all. And you could watch it on Amazon Prime, as we said. And that is all for this week's episode of Test Patterns. And speaking of Amazon, if you'd like to watch something on Amazon or buy something off of Amazon, if you're going to do that, you should support our show by clicking a link that we give you before you make your purchase on Amazon. And that link, you can find the show description a couple places. You can find it on our website, testpatterns.libsyn.com, L-I-B-S-Y-N.com, or just Google test patterns and it comes up. And just click on a link we give you before you make your final purchase on Amazon. And Amazon sends us some money. You don't pay anything extra and everybody wins. And thank you for listening as always. And it's another solid 153 episode in the can. I think it's also, is it the end of the month, Kyle, and we forgot to do a shuffle review?
Yeah, I think we did.
Well, maybe next week we'll do one.
Or, yeah, I guess Comics Corner is the beginning
is
of
it,
the month.
Whatever, it's fine. Well, we'll do a shuffle review next week. We'll shuffle things a little bit on our end. All right.
There we go.
Okay, so that is all. Thank you for listening, as always. We'll see you again next week. Same time, same place, same internet. Kyle.
Thanks for the memories, Dave. See you later. Bye.
Hello?
It's me, you jerk.
Do you find me amusing?
No, I do. I think you're funny.
What about me do you think is funny?
I think your face is funny. Will you teach me how to smoke a cigar, Dave?
I have the feeling you probably have the hang of it, Richard.
What are you laughing at?
Is that a rug?
You're talking about my hair. Right, well, all right, what is that, a swim cap? What are you wearing? Come on! Have your friends treated you differently since you've been out of the slammer?
No. But I've moved on with my life, so I don't really want to talk about it anymore.
I know. This is where you and I are different, because this is all I want to talk about.
I screwed up.
No, I've been wanting to be on your show in the worst way for the longest time.
Well, you're on in the worst way, believe me. You got a big house. Everybody's seen it on TV. Right. Every idiot in the area is going to drive by honking now.
Was that you that I said?
For sure. I have the feeling about 60% of what you say is crap.
You know, you look sharp.
You haven't seen me naked.
We're going to keep it that way.
I've made jokes about you, not just one or two, not just ongoing here and there, intermittent, but